Fast Break Podcast, Thursday, January 9th, 2025. What is going on, everybody? Zach Graham, a.k.a. Cole Eisenberg, DFS, joined once again by my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. And if you didn't know that the wild card weekend was close, Adam's outfit can certainly tip you off. Adam, we've talked about a little football, I think, on the last couple episodes, just given the time of the year. How you feeling, man?
I was talking to somebody yesterday, actually, like, with how my anxiety works with the Bills. Like, if I wasn't a Bills fan and I saw the Bills were hosting the Broncos in the first round, I'd be like, oh, the Bills are going to win by, like, 14. But yeah. Because I'm a Bills fan, I'm like, oh, are they going to lose? Like,
right.
But then I saw Kyle Williams is going to be the Bills legend of the game, and now I'm confident again. Nice. But, yeah, I mean, with any game, I'm anxious, but still confident.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably how you approached, well, to a lesser degree,
because it's a much, regular season much, camp. Much lesser.
Like, yeah.
Oh, God forbid if they lost last night, they'd be, what, 31-5?
Yeah. So we did have the much anticipated battle for first place for the best record in the league between the Cavs and the Thunder last night. Huge Cavs victory there. Again, the regular season nature of this game notwithstanding, because I think this is, just right off the bat, this is one of the couple kind of measuring stick type of games, especially that a team like Cleveland needs, not just for themselves, but I think for the entire NBA fan base as well, because I think the most common refrain you hear from folks outside of the Cleveland area when you talk about this year's edition of the Cavs is, okay, but like, is this for real? Is this something they can do in the playoffs? And I think, I guess for me, Adam, the answer to the first question is absolutely yes. And last night certainly did not push me towards no, they can't, to the latter question. Like, I think there are a couple factors that make this Cleveland team different and much more improved compared to last season's team. And some of the things I'm seeing, especially on a national stage like last night, where people like myself who, like, I watch Cavs games when I can, but they're not the team that I'm tuned into night in and night out. Being able to really sit down, just single screen, watch that game last night, I was extremely impressed, even being somebody who I think was already considering this Cavs team to be, quote unquote, for real. What were your takeaways from the big win last night, 129-122 at home?
Yeah, there was a lot. I think, and I tweeted it too, like, if you took this performance of the last year's version of this Cavs team, if Donovan Mitchell goes out and has 4 points in the first half and is struggling so much offensively and they're playing arguably the best team in basketball, that Cavs team last year is probably down 15 at the half, probably the very minimum. And yet they were up 3 at the half. And it's because of the two X factors we've been talking about all offseason. It's been Garland and Mobley. And like, I'm not sitting here, even though I'm a huge Cavs fan, saying, oh, the Cavs have to have all four of their main guys in the All-Star game. I think 2 is fine. Mm-hmm. But if there was ever a game where they showed that they are worthy of having all four of those guys, it was last night, because Mitchell has probably his worst game of the season. Lu Dort has him in the torture chamber. And Mobley, Allen, and Garland all dominate. Like, Jared Allen was unbelievable in this game. And I understand there's so many of those instances where Hartenstein is really the only center they have, and then he gets into foul trouble. Then they go back to Jalen Williams at the 5, and I've talked highly about Jalen Williams playing small ball 5 all year, but against Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, it's just not going to work. Jared Allen had 17 offensive rebounding opportunities last night, like, just insane. And then Mobley, like, got off to actually a slowish start. But, man, like, attacking those mismatches, going right at Hartenstein when he knew he was in foul trouble. And then the bench. It's been the story for the bench, too. Like, Max Strus comes off the bench and is one of their 3 best players in the game. Ty Jerome has 15 points in 12 minutes off the bench with 0 threes. Dean Wade doesn't come off the bench. He starts, but he was great in the first half. This team just feels different. Garland was really consistent. The only players that really didn't play well, in my opinion, were Mitchell, LeVert, and probably the minivan. And if there's one thing I want the Cavs to do is maybe to try to trade for somebody deadline to take minivan spot in the rotation, because I cannot stand watching him play. But other than that, like, this team is awesome. Evan Mobley, like, I think he's a lock for the All-Star game. He is unbelievable. We're starting to get to the point now where it's like, pretty soon he could be the Cavs' best player. Like, he's doing that much this year. And again, I do want to preface this by saying not having Caruso and Chet is obviously huge for the Thunder, but the Cavs still dropped 129 points against the best defense in basketball that gives up 103 per game, and their best player was awful.
Yeah.
So it just shows that this offensive, you know, this team being quote unquote the best offensive basketball, it's legit. And it's not just because, oh, they have a guy like Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell's numbers are down this season. So, yeah, I'm not like, I thought this team was for real, obviously, before this game. And obviously nothing that they did last night should move you off that. But I think it's cool because the casual NBA fan knows about Mitchell. They know about SGA. But I think it's cool to be able to see guys like Mobley in that spotlight yesterday. Jared Allen, who got a lot of flack for not showing up in the playoff series against New York, he plays out of his mind in a huge spotlight game. And then, like I mentioned, Jalen Williams on the other side. Like, I thought that was a really fun game, not just for the spotlight of having the two best records in basketball, but I didn't realize it until they showed it on the broadcast how historic it actually was, with teams on winning streaks playing each other, teams with 30-plus wins and five or fewer losses. Like, It was really cool, and the coolest part, I think, about it was it's still two smaller market teams getting the spotlight on the main stage. So, yeah, and it felt like a playoff game. It was probably one of the five most fun games of the year.
Yeah, I think it was on that note, like, it was really good for the league to have this game really live up to the billing, that us and the entire kind of NBA media landscape, the hype that we built this game up to be, it delivered. And again, I know you're Cavs guy, so you have watched more Cavs than I have. Your guy, Evan Mobley, man, I mean, he is, like, taking a leap for him might be an understatement. It might be, because he has, like, obviously we've known the ceiling, and I think that ceiling, at least in my mind, has fluctuated over the first 3 years of his career, but this is by far the best I have ever seen him play. That was one of the better games I've seen him play in general through his young NBA tenure here. 21-10, 7 assists, a steal and a block on 8 of 13 from the floor. And then, man, like, you look at what J.A. did last night. Jared Allen, 25 points, 11 boards, 6 assists, 3 steals, and a block, 9 of 11 from the floor. Like, you mentioned it. The work he was doing, Jared Allen, on the glass, specifically on the offensive end, 7-0 boards. Like, there was 21 total O boards in this game. Jared Allen had a third of them between the two teams. He was an absolute menace. Especially, and this was clearly part of their game plan, is crash the glass on both ends, because this Thunder team is so poor on the boards. And I think this is a team, like, you mentioned it, right? No Chet, and to a lesser extent, no Caruso. Like, this Thunder team is fantastic. They're great. And they are going to be even better if and when they get those guys back in the mix. But they were also on a 15-game win streak. This is still an elite team, even without those guys. And it seems to me like the Cavs, at least physically, on paper, have a little bit of a recipe to maybe get the better of a team like Oklahoma City in a potential finals matchup because of how oversized they are. And I think that the league and the casual fan would really turn their nose up at Cleveland and Oklahoma City in the finals. But I think last night's matchup, again, like, I wouldn't expect all potential 7 games to be that damn entertaining. But, like, from, like, a basketball, just, like, nerdy basketball perspective, the matchups, the adjustments, the one-on-one battles we could see even. You mentioned Dort and Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah. Like,
the fact you survived a 1 of 11 start from Donovan Mitchell and
doesn't happen a year ago. At all.
Not even close. And I thought you brought up we talked about the foul trouble, like, replacing it, not having to play Jalen with a Y Williams, it, like, and really have to break the glass. that would be a huge boost to OKC, like replacing all of those.
Because the problem when he came in was he was way too slow off pick and roll defense. So like they couldn't really play him a lot. So you had to play Jalen Williams at the five. And again, I love him, but I don't know if there's a worse team in the league for him to have to play small ball five against, especially when Mobley's playing as confident he's playing. And like, I think it's cool to see in that game. I think you got a really good look at three of the most, I don't think Hartenstein's underrated for people who really follow basketball as a facilitator, but those three centers in that game, Hartenstein, Allen, and Mobley, three of the most underrated passing centers in the league, and Hartenstein almost triple-doubled. And my goodness, I mean, the Dirk fadeaway, anything Steph Curry shoots, I'm trying to think of the most unstoppable shots in the history of basketball, the Tim Duncan bank shot, the Luka Harden step backs, and then it's the Hartenstein push floater. Most unstoppable shots in the history of basketball. I swear. Yeah, also with the Cavs, I wanted to point this out too. Kenny Atkinson should win Coach of the Year, not just because this team is off to a ridiculous start, but it's been clear the difference he's made. On offense, it's been way more cutting, way less just screen and roll. Mm-hmm. Defensively, the adjustments he's made and when to put guys in, getting Ty Jerome into the game and him going on that run for them. Then in the fourth quarter specifically, the Cavs went back and forth between zone and man. And like, zone is probably the best way to defend the Thunder because they have guys that can shoot, but they're incredibly streaky. And Shea's obviously somebody that wants to get to the basket. So that zone really helped him out defensively in the fourth quarter. And again, the adjustments and the changes Kenny Atkinson's made, can't say enough about him. The depth, I mean, it was great to see Max Strus finally get going. Okoro didn't really play much, but he's obviously always really engaged defensively when he's out there. This team's for real, man.
Yep.
And it's no knock on the Thunder. I still think you can make the case they're still the best team in the league, and they're missing two of their three best defensive players and probably their second best overall player, arguably. So.
Yeah. And that's what, like, I hope that we get this, man. Like, this would be, I think, a great
final. Dude, can you imagine a 7-game series with, like, you can literally have a ton of minutes with Chet and Hartenstein and then Mobley and J.A. That'd be so fun.
Yeah, and if you put Chet out there, right, you bring up the zone that had so much success last night. Like, can you do that? I don't think so if you've got Chet out there roaming on the perimeter as a, you know, right around a 40% three-point shooter, at least last season. And you brought up Strus, right, 5 of 6 from three. Like, to be able to get him going, and Isaac Okoro was limited off the bench. And I know you want limited Isaac Okoro minutes in a matchup against the Thunder either way, but, like, he is a usable body in a playoff series, in a bench role. Like, oh, I hope we get to see this again. That was fantastic. And it was even highlighted in a stronger sense by how poor, from an entertainment value perspective, the second game of the doubleheader last night on ESPN was. Before we talk a little bit about Spurs Bucks, we do have some news here. Right as we're recording, Hornets and Lakers is postponed tonight on Thursday. Our thoughts are with everybody in the Los Angeles area. That game postponed due to the wildfires in LA. This obviously has impacted a ton of people out there in Los Angeles, including, apparently, as Shams Charania reports, J.J. Redick has lost his home in these fires. So again, thoughts with everybody. Hope everybody stays safe and that we can get a handle on those soon. So Spurs and Bucks here, Adam. Just a dominant Milwaukee Bucks win here at home. This game was pretty darn entertaining in the first quarter. Like, I don't know if you saw that little scoop up and under finish by Victor Wembanyama that I literally yelled expletives next to my fiance, and she was not paying attention to the game. She was like, what? She thought somebody got hurt. And I was just reacting to the just insane finish by Victor there. And that was about 6 minutes into the game, and that was the high point for me on the night. 121-105, and really the score is not indicative of how not close this game was in the second half. Giannis, for the second time against Victor, just getting whatever he wants. Like, you see the flashes of Victor being able to guard him one-on-one, frustrating Giannis at the rim. He's time after time going to the rim, gets rejected, complains to the official. But then when he stopped worrying about that and just used the physical gifts, the physical advantages he has size-wise, weight-wise, mass-wise against Victor, like the one time he drove, put his shoulder into Wembanyama's chest and Victor flew like 6 feet backwards and Giannis just laid it in. Giannis 25, 16, and 8 with a block. 11 of 21 from the field in his 36 minutes. Dominant performance by him. But the one thing I wanted to talk about, and I don't know how much you, I know you're on the East Coast. It's a little bit later for a game like this, especially when.
Yeah, I watched the first half.
The importance of Brook Lopez, dude, to be able to put him on Steph Castle, because the Spurs love running that Castle Wembanyama pick and roll. And to be able to have Brook there to either play in the drop, right, because you don't really need to guard Steph Castle all that closely at this point of his career from three, and to be able to switch, to be able to play in the drop, like, it's just such a luxury to have somebody like Brook Lopez that can be that secondary defender and really help at the rim. And I thought that was something that they adjusted to compared to the matchup we saw between these guys in San Antonio last January, which was the Victor did not play in Milwaukee last year. So we saw one game, and that was a big adjustment that I think paid off in a big way for the Bucks and Doc Rivers.
Dude, I thought we were getting a legacy Wemby game, because I texted you like within the first minute of the game.
Yeah,
Wemby gets an offensive putback over Giannis, forces him to turn the ball over on the other end, and then hits that crazy one-leg three-pointer, and then blocks him on the other end.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is going to be one of those like 36, 18, 7, 6, and 4 games. And I was watching, and then I ultimately ended up watching the first half because I had to do some football stuff, and it was getting a little bit later. But, yeah, I mean, nice little reminder for you that Giannis is still – we've been talking a lot about like SGA and Jokic – still a good reminder that Giannis is still arguably the second best player in the league too. What do you think about Milwaukee going forward though, with Middleton now coming off the bench?
I mean, I think they prefer him to be in the starting lineup, but clearly his ankles were not, like, his lower half in general has not been, you know, he's been out more than he's been playing, or at least full go over the last two plus seasons. Like, he has been, whether it's been in the more limited starting role or off the bench over the last two seasons, he's been really, really efficient. When he goes out there and plays 22 minutes, like, you're not surprised at all when he goes out there and throws up, you know, 15, 6, and 6 in that limited amount of time. But I just have, again, like, it's I'm not breaking news, or it's not a hot take that I have concerns about his injury, but, like, to have this little bit of a setback here over the last week where he missed a game for injury management that was not a back-to-back, it was an island game, and then to shift him back to a bench role to make sure they manage those minutes and keep them more in the low 20s after we saw them trickling up into the high 20s in that starting role, that's pretty disheartening for me. And, like, I think this is a team, and they are a little bit limited in terms of their flexibility because they're a first apron team. Or actually, no, they're a second apron team, so they can't aggregate. So, like, this is a team that is in desperate need of a move because I think they are, to me, pretty clearly a top five team in the East, and Giannis can keep you competitive in any matchup, but, like, to really, for me to take them seriously come April and May, they need to make a move, and there's just limited avenues for them to do so.
Yeah, otherwise you really need, like, Torian Prince or Gary Trent, like, one of these dudes to just really step up, and they're just not consistent players. It's why they've been, you know, not so much Gary Trent, but Torian Prince has played across the league. Like, they're just not players you can consistently get production and stable minutes out of for a 7-game series. So, but I do think, like, for the time being, until Middleton can, if he can get to 100%, like, having him not be full strength against some more of the backups, and so a lot of those minutes will probably help.
Yeah, you know, and the Bucks do this 2 of 12 from Bobby Portis, like Middleton himself, 2 of 7. Like, it wasn't an outstanding game from Milwaukee, but a dominant result against San Antonio. And, like, for the Spurs, like, I don't think 52 three-point attempts is where they want to be on a night-to-night basis, just given the lack of elite shooting. You do get, you know, 2 of 5 from Keldon Johnson, which is well above his average this season. Chris Paul, 5 of 6 from three. But like all of that said, it wasn't even close. Spurs have lost 3 straight. The loss they had on Monday night to the Bulls was very disappointing, I think, for that group. Like, that is a Chicago team that I think the Spurs organization thinks they should be taking care of. And they were up 19. So it's a tough January schedule for them. Of course, hovering in that play-in range out west, a 3-game winning or losing streak can skyrocket you up or drop you down those Western Conference standings. Let's go ahead. Let's put our Wednesday night doubleheader in the rearview mirror. Let's talk trade machine here, Adam. And I'm going to nix our little overlay here with our names so I can share some trade machine trades that I cooked up last night watching those games. I just want to spend a few minutes talking Jimmy Butler. The Suns, I believe, are the betting favorite right now to land him. As we've discussed here, I'm still highly skeptical that that deal can get done because it hinges on Bradley Beal waiving his no trade clause. So a deal to the Suns only happens if Bradley Beal waives his no trade clause and says, yeah, I want to go live and play in Miami. Now, that on the surface sounds pretty good, but the fact that Bradley Beal fully controls that situation just makes me think that maybe something like this could be in the works. Jimmy Butler for Fred VanVleet straight up works from a salary cap standpoint. Now, are there picks, maybe one pick singular or multiple, maybe some seconds exchanging hands here? I assume so. I don't really want to speculate on that. I thought it was interesting that these two guys, one for one, work from a cap perspective. Now, does Fred VanVleet fit into the long-term future plans of Miami? Probably not. Certainly not at this $43 million a year number. And it also creates somewhat of a logjam in their backcourt with Terry Rozier, with Tyler Hero. But I think the Heat are adamant to get Jimmy out of that situation. And with the Fred VanVleet contract being the same length as Jimmy's deal, they can also just get out from... the goal here is not necessarily, in my eyes, for the Heat to bring back a package that, you know, keeps them competitive in the East and vaults them towards being a contender in the next couple years. I think just acquiring the cap space that getting rid of Jimmy gives you, like letting him expire, I think is just keeping him away from the team the rest of the year. That may be an option. We'll see. I think the Players Association may have something to say about that. But you get a similar kind of result here with Fred VanVleet, where you can let him expire after 2 years. I believe it is a player option next year, similar to Jimmy. So maybe the Heat do this. I don't think that is all that far-fetched. And from a Rockets perspective, you get a little bit thinner in that backcourt, of course. But for me, Adam, you have the point guard of the future, and maybe he's not the point guard in the truest sense of the term, but it's time to let Amen Thompson play 30-plus minutes for this team. Amen Thompson is very, very good. You need to look no further than the praise that LeBron James heaped on not just Amen, but the Thompson twins together.
I watched that game back.
Yeah.
And I almost don't want them to trade for Jimmy Butler. Yeah. Because Amen Thompson, he destroyed them on the glass.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would literally grab a defensive rebound and sprint. And it put their defense in such a bind. I don't know, man. In terms of flexibility and picks and all that stuff, and where the team is in the standings, this seems like one of the better landing spots for Jimmy.
Yeah.
But I'm also kind of torn because I like outside of really Fred and Dylan Brooks, and obviously when Steven Adams gets in there, the young core they have. Mm-hmm. I like the pace they play at when Amen Thompson's out there. I don't know, man. Maybe I almost go for a smaller move if I'm the Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'm also just looking too much into one of the few games I have watched from Amen Thompson, but he is the one thing I'll definitely agree on is he needs to play as many minutes as almost anybody on that team at this point. I think he's their second best player.
Yeah. I mean, he is very, very good. I'm a huge fan of both Thompson twins, but Amen, clearly the guy who's a little bit more ready for a role like that. Now, that does not help Houston and one of their, what I think is one of their shortcomings, and that is shooting. Jimmy Butler is not a good shooter, nor is Amen Thompson. So maybe there needs to be more moves made around the fringes, but I think this does make the Rockets better, even though our trade machine here says they lose a win with this trade in their model. But like, you can make additional moves with this team. It makes sense to me. Like, I'm not in Jimmy Butler's head. I don't know if he values this at all, but he's from the Houston area. He grew up in Tomball, just to the west of Houston. So like, kind of a homecoming of sorts. This is a team where he would be surrounded by a young, very talented up-and-coming core, and he can kind of, for lack of a better term, age a little bit more gracefully, I think, with this Rockets franchise compared to Miami. And like, I don't think Fred VanVleet is long for Houston after this deal either. So
is Jimmy starting at the four in this scenario?
Well, especially when Jabari Smith is out a month to 2 months problem. Right now, right? But then when he comes back, what happens? Could you then put Amen Thompson back into the six man role? Maybe. I think you put Dylan Brooks into the six man role.
Yes.
And you bring Amen in to start at the one. So it would be Thompson, Jalen Green, Jimmy, Jabari, and Şengün.
That's got to be one of the three worst 3-point shooting 5-man units in the league, right?
Absolutely. So like, can you go out and grab some more shooting before the deadline?
Like, can you get a point guard that can shoot? Like, obviously Fred would be, like, Fred's a capable shooter, but like, can you get like somebody you don't have to give up a lot for? I'm trying to think of players that might be on the market, but like, that would be ideal. Or
How about Colin Sexton?
That'd be fun.
What if you did? All right. Well, this is live content, my friends. Does Colin Sexton for Dylan Brooks work? Let's see. Because if you are bringing Colin Sexton, and you have Amen Thompson in there,
because you feel good about the wings if you make this deal. Like, you feel pretty good about them now when Jabari's back.
Yeah.
But especially if you make this deal. I mean, you got Jimmy, you got Thompson, you got Jabari when he comes back. Tari Eason. Cam Whitmore's been pretty good.
It does seem like we have a little bit of, maybe not a little bit, that we have serious concern about the health of Tari Eason's lower half right now with how sore his knee and his shin have been. He's been dealing with that injury for the better part of a year now. But if he's like healthy and ready to go, if you gave me, you know, Sexton, Green, Thompson, Jimmy, Jabari, Şengün, Cam Whitmore, Aaron Holiday, like, I don't know, man. I feel like we could go to war with that group. Like, Colin Sexton doesn't help you much on the defensive end. But again, like, you can play Amen at the one. You can play Amen at the five. Yep. So, like, they have so many different ways, not just before this deadline, but over the next couple years. Houston, the second seeded team in the West currently, has just so many ways they could go. For what it's worth, Sexton for Brooks straight up does, in fact, work. I would imagine you'd have to send at least some amount of picks, be it first or second round picks, along with Dylan Brooks.
Colin Sexton's good, man. Like, I think he'd be a perfect addition for a lot of teams.
What if he's your sixth man?
So I'm saying, like, can you imagine, like, I don't know if, I don't think they have what it would take to get him, but like, imagine if he was on like the Sixers right now. Like, he'd be a perfect sixth man for them.
Yeah. Well, so like, if you start Amen, Jalen, Jimmy, Jabari, Şengün with Sexton as the sixth man,
mm-hmm.
Tari Eason, Cam Whitmore, Aaron Holiday, Steven Adams, Jock Landale, like, I think that team is better than the Rockets is currently constructed, but maybe not. I just think it's very interesting, and I think that's a team to watch because I think it's easier from a cap perspective
100%
to get Jimmy to Houston compared to Phoenix. So that was the first one I had here. Anything else for you on the Jimmy Butler trade talk?
Yeah, just wait and see. A little less than a month out, it feels like it's pretty much going to happen at this point. Just comes down to which team. And Phoenix is obviously super interesting because, like, I feel like, you know, there's been all this talk of, like, oh, are they bringing Beal off the bench to make him one out and waive the no trade clause? But also, it's like, I feel like there might have to be a third team involved for a potential Butler to Phoenix trade, which always makes things even more interesting. So,
yeah. Well, let's talk a couple of Cam Johnson trades because that's another player we expect to be on the move before February's early deadline. I've got a pair of trades here. Adam, how about getting Cam Johnson to the Thunder? And why I think it's very easy to put the Thunder in.
Oh, you have some guts putting your favorite player of all time.
I know, Usman Jang into the deal. But so this deal would be Cam Johnson to the Thunder for Aaron Wiggins, Usman Jang, and two first rounders. And so I put Philadelphia's 2025 first and Denver's 2027 first into this deal. But they can, again, they have what, I think 13 or 14 first round picks available to them over the next 6 years. So they can throw in as many as they want, whichever ones they want. So I think this, again, like you could remix the haul back for the Nets almost infinite ways, right, given the assets that Oklahoma City has. But I think these two teams linking up for a potential Cam Johnson trade makes a lot of sense. Cause dude, if the Thunder want Cam Johnson, nobody else can outbid them.
Yeah, the only team that can really even have a chance would maybe be like San Antonio.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and even like then, other teams, like, again, like, does he fit into, I mean, now you piqued my interest here. I actually would love Cameron Johnson, especially in that Keldon Johnson spot.
But like nobody else even has close to the assets that those teams would be able to.
Utah is right there, but Utah is not in the market for Cam Johnson.
Exactly.
So Thunder make a lot of sense to me.
Also, especially like maybe teams see what the Cavs did. Not that, you know, the Thunder crazily struggled on offense, but maybe teams start to implement more zone against them until they get consistent shooting from Cason Wallace and those guys. Cam Johnson, and then obviously Chet returning, would make that a lot less viable of a strategy. And he's just a good player. Like,
well, how about, right, this Orlando Magic team, who I know we're going to talk about here in a few moments, but they've been in the market for shooting for what feels like 3 years. And I think, again, they also have enough picks to potentially at least throw their hat in the ring for Cam Johnson, because we know they're going to be getting healthy here very, very soon. So this works from a cap perspective. Cam Johnson for Cole Anthony and Jet Howard. So the Nets get a guy in Cole Anthony who can go out there and take 18 shots a game when they've got the tank turned up to 11 later this season, and make them not lose every game by 45 points. We'll just lose every game.
And we get to see Jet Howard actually play.
That is a young asset that is relatively unproven, getting, you know, short spurts in this Orlando rotation. But, like, you can really let the leash go if you get Jet Howard to a place like Brooklyn down the stretch run of this season. And then, again, throwing in two first, because I imagine that it's probably going to take two first to pry Cam Johnson away, even if they're highly protected or they're swaps or what have you. But I think the Magic make a lot of sense as a team that should probably be trying to explore talks for a guy like this, because if they're healthy, man, unless you have anything else to add here, we can go ahead and talk about Orlando and what is about to happen for this team.
Yeah, I guess the only question is, once they are fully healthy, would Cam Johnson come off the bench? I'd probably keep KCP in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, right? So then you'd have, if assuming health there, would be Suggs, KCP, Franz, Paolo, and
Goga. I'm starting Goga, bro. He's been too good.
He has been really, really good. But then you'd expect, right, you'd probably still have Cam Johnson in a 30-ish minute role off the bench. So, like, you're really shrinking that rotation down then? And I think that's a good thing. Like, you don't need or even want a 9 or 10 man rotation when you get
you have that starting five. You would have Cam theoretically off the bench, and then Wendell Carter, Anthony Black, Tristan Da Silva. Like, that's probably enough right there. And then Mo as well.
Yeah. Well, and
when he gets back.
Right. But that'll be next season. So, we're trying to make noise here, I think Cam Johnson would be a pretty great addition. Like, is that maybe really two first rounders for a guy who might come off the bench? But, like, I don't know. Like,
I don't even think you have to view it like that. Like, I think you're just viewing it as somebody that can play 30 to 32 minutes, whether he starts or not. And then obviously there's upside for more when he does start. And, like, that can change. Like, this team's clearly had some sort of bad luck with injuries. Like, why not just go out, get a good player that can shoot and add to your rotation more and see what happens. So, as a Cavs fan, I don't like that. I don't like the idea of Orlando getting healthier than adding a really good shooter. But it makes just a perfect amount of sense.
Yeah. Well, looking ahead to the weekend, some games that we've got our eyes on that will be on our screens. Tonight, Houston at Memphis. That game's a 1-point spread. Looks like we're going to get Memphis getting some guys back. Still no Jabari Smith for Houston, but that one a 1-point spread. The second and third seeds in the West right now. That is clearly, to me, the best actual basketball game to
play. And the main storyline, of course, Steven Adams' revenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Better Funaki going back.
Probably one of the players that I think would not care less about revenge games.
Yeah. Not even just go give everybody a hug over there, you know? Like, but Friday, man, like, okay, Thunder at Knicks. That is must-watch television for me. But I think the storyline on Friday is Bucks at Magic because we expect Paolo Banchero to return on Friday. And, like, Adam, I really cannot believe, looking at the standings now on what is reportedly the eve of Paolo's return, after I think like 2 months out and about a month now without Franz Wagner, 22-16, 4 seed in the East. I mean, it's incredible to me to that win. This team is 6 games still over 500. So, you know, Jamal Mosley, a little sprinkle on coach of the year there, but yes, getting Paolo back in the mix tomorrow night. Let's talk a little bit about the Magic here.
Yeah, I'll just get this out of the way. This was my stock up, just the Magic being able. I mean, I believe he was upgraded to questionable, so it's probably a good sign and indication that he will play. Minutes most likely will be limited because he's missed so much time. But, yeah, I mean, Paolo, it feels like it was like 5 years ago now, that 50-point game he had. But it literally feels like it was that long. Like, Paolo, going into the season, we thought would probably, like, at season's end would be like a consensus top 15 player on the planet, and I think he'll get there maybe by the end of the season as long as he can stay healthy. But it's good to see him back. And again, like, they've also had a ton of injuries elsewhere. It's not like they've just been missing Paolo and Franz. Like, they've been, Suggs has missed some time, Mo's obviously out. Like, they've been so banged up, and to not only be like we would have been impressed if they were like 19-19, like just dead even 500. They're 6 games above 500. Like, They've had wins against teams they should have lost to with the players they've missed. So stock up for the Magic, the job they've done, the fact that they'll, looks like, get their best player back tomorrow going into the weekend. So it's, you know, again, Jamal Mosley, shout out to him and everybody involved. This team is, again, when this team's fully healthy, like, I don't want to play them.
Yep. And hopefully Franz is, you know, on the heels of Paolo, you know, a month from now. Maybe after the All-Star break, hopefully we're seeing Franz.
Also, Tristan Da Silva, like, I don't think he'll win Rookie of the Year, but
he's been solid.
Wouldn't hate looking at his odds. He just doesn't really get enough opportunities, especially when these guys get back. But yeah, he's been really, really solid.
Saturday night, Wemby at LA. So I guess with the LA game postponed tonight,
the Spurs don't play, just Wemby.
Yeah, Wemby versus LeBron. That is the game. That is the matchup we all want to see. And Wemby against Anthony Davis too. Yeah. Like, we have seen plenty of matchups between these two teams. With Victor Wembanyama active, it has been highly entertaining to watch him go up against these two future Hall of Famers. And I think this is the first of 2 games. I believe they also run it back in LA on Monday night. So not necessarily a must watch there because you'll get another opportunity on Monday. But then you go to Sunday. We've got Bucks at Knicks. So I'm going to be watching multiple Knicks games here this weekend. And then if you want to see
what time's that game?
I think that's early afternoon, but if you want to see a murder, Adam,
I'll be missing that game.
Yeah, the Thunder at Wizards. I think you'll be missing that one too. But
that might be, what was it, Memphis that won by like 60 last year or whatever it was. That might be this year's version of that.
Yeah. So looking just to make sure on that Sunday schedule for you. Milwaukee at New York. That'll be 3 p.m. Eastern, so probably no Adam Fife.
It'll be hopefully with Mitchell Trubisky in the game by then. That'd be great.
Yeah, if you could be, you know, happy viewing that game.
Yeah, like, but I'll also be with friends getting ready to watch the Eagles. So basketball will unfortunately not be on my television very much on Sunday.
Yeah. We'll close out episode 36 of the Fast Break podcast here with our stock up, stock down. I'll start today, Adam, with my stock down, and that will just be the Phoenix Suns. 2-8 in their last 10, 3 games under 500. They are a game out of the play-in here in the West, and I just think we kind of talked about it on Monday's episode as well, but like, I don't think the lineup change from Coach Budenholzer to put Beal on the bench, to put Nurkic on the bench, bringing rookie Ryan Dunn into the starting lineup, it has not done wonders to like kickstart this team and you know, try to rocket them up the standings here. Beal controls this entire trade situation. He basically holds the franchise hostage at this point. It just, there's not a lot of good vibes emanating from this Phoenix Suns franchise right now. So they are my stock down here on episode 36. What do you got?
I'm going to go with an interesting one that I kind of thought of while we were talking before we hopped on the podcast. I'm going to go, this is weird. I'm going to go with most of the teams in the NBA outside of Portland, because there was a player I would love for any team to trade for, and it's Jeremy Grant. And yeah, with the way his contract is, it's just going to be almost impossible for these teams. And it stinks, because I would love to see Jeremy Grant, like, when he was with OKC in Denver, like, playing winning basketball. He was a really impactful player, and he's actually gotten better since then. He's obviously got more opportunities, but you know this. I'm very high on Jeremy Grant as a player. He's obviously been banged up for a little bit, but just his contract is going to be so almost impossible for teams to trade for him right now. And on a, you know, with the Jimmy situation, it made this trade deadline look a little bit better, but prior to that, it looked like it was going to be like, which Brooklyn Nets get traded? Will Zach LaVine get traded? And that's about it. But I would love to see Jeremy Grant go play on a winning team. That's kind of where my stock down is. I guess Jeremy Grant and other teams not named Portland.
Yeah. Well, like, I saw somebody speculating, I think last week, about Jeremy Grant potentially being traded to the Lakers, and like, would that be great for 1 year? I think yes, but like,
you better win.
Right? And like, I just don't think a team like the Lakers is going to put Jeremy Grant on their cap sheet for the next, what, 3 years left on this deal? Like, I don't know. I think that's a good stock down, good call by you. I know you mentioned the Orlando Magic were your stock up, so I'll go ahead and close this out. My stock up is the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons, 19-18, 5-game winning streak, Adam.
What'd they win last year? 13 games?
Something like that. And they have 19? They're over 500 in January for the first time since 2018. I know, like, this is not the last episode before the trade deadline that we're going to mess around with the trade machine. I think they're the only team right now with any sort of substantial cap space. I think about $19 million in cap space. So I think I would be shocked, I think it's fair to say, if the Pistons weren't at least involved in a trade where they're taking on some other team's salary dump, picking up a couple picks, you know, expiring deals and the like. So things are looking up there in Detroit, even the week after that gruesome Jaden Ivey injury. And like, I don't know, man, it's like, it's good vibes. 5 games in a row, we're above 500. They're in the play-in. Like, if we were pre-play-in era, they're the 8th seed right now, dude. Like, this, good vibes in Detroit. Stock up.
Yeah. Talking about like first time all-stars, I mentioned Mobley should be a lock. Cade is definitely a lock. I mean, it's not going to happen, but like, you could make the argument he could start the All-Star game, and I wouldn't really, like, it's not going to happen. It's going to be Brunson and Mitchell, but like, he's been that good.
Or LaMelo.
Yeah, or LaMelo for sure.
I mean, he was leading the first vote. I know we got the second round of voting in today, but
a lot of it too is like, LaMelo might be my 101 of players I would want to see in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of it. With obviously, he's been amazing too. And then you have like a team that all of a sudden looks like they could, like, I mention this all the time with these young teams like Cleveland a couple years ago. Like, if you have a chance with a young core for the most part to play meaningful basketball, why not make a push for the play-in and get that experience for Cade and these guys? You have flexibility. You have the Tim Hardaway expiring. You have cap. You have picks. Like, maybe they could be a team that's in the market for, especially after losing Jaden Ivey, maybe they could go out and get a Cam Johnson, you know, maybe even Zach LaVine as like a one-to-one replacement for Ivey. Like, somebody. Like, I think it'll be really, they become probably one of the most interesting teams for me to watch at the deadline. Whereas a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I was like not really considering them, because nobody ever thinks, oh, the Pistons, maybe they could be buyers. But I mean, why not at this point? The East outside of the top 3-4 is kind of wide open.
Yeah. And what a playoff, you know, a playoff berth could do wonders, I think, for that fan base. Just like somewhat similar to what we saw happen in Sacramento a couple years ago. Yeah. But like, obviously, Detroit also needs to continue to have an eye on the future and not really, you know, go overboard this year, especially with Ivy out for the, you know, the rest of the season, or the majority of the rest of the season. Like, they're building something here. They're getting good results. It's an interesting time there in Detroit.
That draft class, by the way, what would it be, 2021? Yeah, the Mobley, Cunningham, Franz draft class. Yeah, just stupid good.
Yeah, insane, right? Cade, Jalen Green, Evan Mobley, Scotty Barnes, Jalen Suggs, Kuminga, Franz Wagner, Josh Giddey was in there.
Was that Şengün?
Şengün at 16. That was when I was screaming in my apartment that year that they didn't take Şengün. They took Josh Primo, Trey Murphy, Jalen Johnson at 20.
That's a sick draft class.
Right? Isaiah Jackson, Keon Johnson still floating around the league, Quentin Grimes at 25, Cam Thomas at 27, Santi Aldama at 30, Herb Jones at 35, Ayo Dosunmu at 38, Deuce McBride at 36. What a class that was.
Really good.
All right, everybody. That'll do it for us here on episode 36 of the FTN Fast Break Podcast. I'll be back with Mike Randall on Monday, and then Adam will be here this time next week, hopefully still with a big old Bills smile on his face.
Enjoy. Might not be here Thursday if the Bills lose, yeah. To be honest with you.
Say, enjoy your wild card weekend, everybody. Enjoy your NBA weekend, everybody. We'll do the same, and we'll see you back here on Monday. Till then, he's Adam, and I'm Zach. Goodbye.